You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hello and welcome to the Break a Bat podcast, where baseball meets Broadway. An attempt to show that my two favorite mediums don't have to live in such separate worlds and maybe even break some stigmas. We're happy to have you with us. Now let's play ball. Hello and welcome to Break a Bat. I'm your host, Al Malafronte, coming at you from one of my favorite stadiums, the Broadway Podcast Network Studios. You know, a question that I was asked recently was, who on Broadway right now reminds you most of some of your favorite Yankees as far as going about their craft? I want to bring up a specific example here, someone who is not only one of my favorite players as a kid, but remains so to this day. And mainly because it's something that you don't see that much anymore. I think even the most fair-weather baseball fan in the theater community remembers Paul O'Neill. And not just because he was on Seinfeld. Paul O'Neill always played with an undeniable heart and intensity that spanned 17 major league seasons, 9 of which were spent on the stage over at Yankee Stadium. Every at-bat seemed like it was the most important one of his life. There was an intense physicality that was second to none when he played right field, and he would do anything to make the big play in any given moment. He took the losses personally. He always gave it his all, stayed true to the performer he was, and it served him pretty well as he went on to play in 4 All-Star games as a member of the Yankees, win a batting title, and most importantly, he was a key piece on 4 World Championship Yankee teams. It was a spectacle to see not only that type of energy in the cast, but also the talent and hard work that made him such an all-star, which my guest today can definitely speak to, which is why I'm pretty pumped to interview her. A Broadway veteran of nearly a decade and a half, she's one of the best triple threats in the game and super fun to watch. Whether it's Grease, Nice Work If You Can Get It, Chicago, or of course a little show called Moulin Rouge playing over at the Al Hirschfeld Theater, I'd batter third in any lineup. If That's a really good position to hit, by the way. Okay. If you'll please turn your attention to home plate just beyond the marquee, now batting, Robin Herter.
I want to clap for that introduction. My face hurts. I have never had an introduction quite like that. Thank you.
You're very welcome. There's a level of theatrics in baseball that apply to Broadway. So I think that this is like the perfect middle ground. That's why you have like those drama masks behind the baseball
Wow. Gosh, I'm so flattered. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. So that's like, you like the Paul O'Neill parallel?
Yes, I do.
Did you know him from that scene with Kramer at least?
I have to say, I don't think so. I watched a lot of Seinfeld, but not like religiously like a lot of people do.
Kramer basically promised the sick kid in the hospital that Paul O'Neill would hit 2 home runs for him in an episode. And so you can imagine what happens with that. Yeah, and they actually got Paul O'Neill to.
Oh my gosh.
Now just, if you don't know Paul O'Neill, I just want to like just give you an idea. Like you've watched baseball before.
Of course. Yes. Yes, I have. I love a live baseball game. They're my favorite.
So just picture this. 9th inning of a World Series game. This was 1996. The Yankees were playing the Braves. Yanks hadn't won a World Series since 1978. And so that's like an 18-year drought. That's pretty long for the Yankees. Mm-hmm. I know you're a Red Sox fan, but, so I shouldn't talk. You had 86 years to wait.
That's right. I actually watched that game when they won.
Against the Cardinals? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I was at Brother Jimmy's. Anyway, keep going.
I kept TV off that entire week. anyway, O'Neill, it's like, he's playing basically on one leg. He's got a strained left hammy. He was such a physical player. So it's like, injuries were inevitable, but like one of the most impressive things about him until like the end of his career, he never really went on the DL, which was the disabled list. Like if you get hurt, mm-hmm. He's out there playing on one leg. Yankees need to win this game. The series is tied 2 games apiece, best of 7 series. Like a 10 pitch at bat from Luis Polonia, who was on the Atlanta Braves, hits this line drive shot that is like it looks like it's a home run right off the bat. Paul O'Neill does this give up your body, no holds barred play, lifts his arm up by the warning track, knows he's going to run into the wall. One of the most dramatic and physical performances I've ever seen on a single play, especially in that moment during the World Series. He makes a play, pounds his fist into the wall. Really, it just defined all the emotion about Paul O'Neill. That's Paul O'Neill in a nutshell for you. He was like the heart and soul of the Yankees. And I feel like that's something that when, you know, we see you perform, you really give off that energy that you care. It's almost like when we're watching you out there, it's someone who's seen you for the first time. I think, how the hell do you do it?
Well, I love it. I have a deep, deep passion that I thought for a moment, right before I got pregnant, I thought that I had to check myself and I didn't know if I still wanted to do this. And it's funny how much stronger it's gotten in the past few years, especially being a part of something like Moulin Rouge, which is such a marathon. It really is the most athletic show I've ever done. And it's so difficult and so straining, but it makes me want to work harder. And just everything about the show is so large and so big, and it's such a spectacle, and it like feeds me even more every night to work harder and just to try to like punch it out, hit it and quit it, and then go back the next day and do it again.
So it pumps you up.
It does. I mean, it's so loud and so big and bright and everything that it really does give me the fuel to like keep going. And the audience, I mean, we see you out there. I mean, it's especially with this show, it's so bright that you can see the audience's faces and I can see them looking at me and they're happy. And that's also like a drug to me, is like, I'm it's not that I'm changing their life, but I'm helping with the escape from whatever their day has been. You get to go into this theater for 2 hours and 40 minutes and just escape and enjoy. I mean, it's theater, it's art. It's such a gift. And the fact that I get to be a part of that and give someone something, a moment, an experience, something that's not tangible, but something that still makes you feel something, that's pretty extraordinary. And not everybody gets to do that with their jobs, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you feel like you're kind of like doing a rock concert up there, except it's like an extremely physical version of a rock concert?
Yeah. Especially because I've never, it's all pop music that we're singing and I'm singing the top harmonies. So and it's like rocky, soulful, like high pitched, like belting. And I get to put a growl on it. So at the end of the show, I really am screaming like I'm in a rock concert. And I still can't believe I have a voice. Usually the audience is screaming and singing along or clapping with us. And I'm just yelling. But it is awesome. Yeah.
Well, you know, Paul O'Neill's nickname was the Warrior. Because of like that intensity.
Interesting.
Yeah. So like.
That's what I call myself.
Are you serious?
A warrior beast.
So I didn't know that. And I just came up with the perfect parallel, apparently. Yeah. So that's a first around here.
It's Moulin Rouge. I said it, I think, in an Instagram post the other day. It's like a cage match. You know what I mean? And it's like, I'm like this beast behind a gate, and the way my show is designed is the gates fly open and you are just this warrior beast that just gallops out. You do your show at like 100 miles an hour and then the gates close and I have like a 40-minute break. And then the beginning of Act 2, gates open and it's like, rah, quite literally, rah, rah, rah.
that's right, your signature song.
Yes, that little number.
It's it really is an art. Now, let me ask you, like, when you were growing up, first of all, I mentioned earlier, you're a triple threat. You can sing, you can dance, you can act. Actresses and actors are athletes in their own special way, which mm-hmm. is one thing I've always really admired. Did you do sports growing up too?
No, I didn't. I saw Cats in Portland, Maine, where I'm from, and I said to my mom, I want to do this. This is what I want to do. I was done. So she put me in dance class. And I was there ever since. I never changed my mind.
It's interesting that Cats is the one that made you realize that you wanted to do this. I feel like, how old were you when you went to see it?
I was six.
I would have been terrified, to be quite frank with you, of that show.
Well, I was a little terrified because they were like coming down the aisles and I was like three rows in and I was a little scared about that. But I was just, it was my first experience of seeing a live musical and I was enamored. The dancing, every aspect about it, all the theatrics, mainly the dancing, but it just like the tire that rises and the big moon and the singing, the art of singing and dancing, it just, I got the bug then and there and I started dance class.
So where you grew up at, you grew up in Maine, correct? Mm-hmm. Take me through the Herder household. Was it very art-centric all the time? Or you kind of like instilled that onto your parents once they realized how passionate you were?
Well, my brothers were very book smart. They were, you know, more into, they didn't, you know, my oldest brother ran track. My other brother, Derek, was very like, you know, he's very, very smart. And I just was this spaz that would just run around and dance all over the house. And that was another reason why my mom put me in dance class, because she was like, she just has all this energy and she won't stop dancing. Just like do something with her to make it organized. Like I just organized the movement. And I started excelling like really, really fast. And I really, really loved it. And then there was this moment where I wanted to quit. I was like, I want to go play sports with my friends, because my girlfriends were either playing soccer or they were playing an instrument or they were, you know, doing something else after school. And I was the only one that went to dance class. And my mom said, nah, finish the year. You're not going to quit. Just finish the year. And that last half of the year, I was introduced to jazz. And that was very sassy. And I really, really liked it. I found my calling.
How old were you when you made your first trip to Broadway?
I was 11 years old. You mean when I just visited New York and saw a Broadway show? Mm-hmm. I was 11. And that's when I was like, I saw Damn Yankees and I saw Bebe Neuwirth play Lola. And I said to my mom, that's what I want to do when I grow up.
Now, the fact that you're from Maine, which is fairly not far from Fenway Park in the grand scheme of things, did that have anything to do with your selection of the show titled Damned Yankees? Like, because you're a Red Sox fan?
No, I had nothing to do. I had listened to the soundtrack. I loved it. And we happened to be staying at the Marriott Marquis. And that's where the show was playing. So we just went downstairs and saw the show. And I fell in love with it. You can put that soundtrack on right now and I will know every word.
Why haven't they done a revival?
Exactly. Why don't they do a revival and cast me and Lola? I just keep saying that in every interview. I'm like, yeah, so do a revival of Damn Yankees and I'll play Lola and make my dream come true.
So Bebe Neuwirth was like one of the early people that you saw perform that really inspired you to like take it a step further?
It was everything. Yeah. Especially just her whole, I love jazz. I love the big brassiness of it. And I just love singing and dancing and being sassy. And she came up in a chaise lounge with, you know, lingerie on and this gorgeous jazz music. And I was like, yep, that's what I want to do. And I was 11. Starting young.
Bold take at age 11.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Now, once you realize, if that's your I want to do this moment, how'd you put the wheels into motion as far as making it happen?
So at that moment, I knew I was a good dancer, but I wanted to be I knew I needed more training ballet-wise, because ballet is the root of all dance. It's your that's where you have to start. And if you don't have the proper technique from ballet training, then you notice a difference and you're just not, in my mind, you're not going to be as good. So I moved to dance schools, started training really hard in ballet, and still kept tap and jazz and all that stuff. Then I realized I needed to, you know, sing. I could kind of sing, but I needed to really sing. So I started taking voice lessons when I was 16. And that's when I started like tiptoeing into musical theater. And I did my first show at Main Street Music Theater called Grease. I was an ensemble member. And yeah, it was my first musical that I was in. And that's when I started. And I just kept going. And eventually, like, ballet kind of faded out. And I just started doing shows and went to college for a hot second at University of New Hampshire. And because I just knew I wasn't ready to just move to New York. I had no money. I was still a kid. But my second year, my sophomore year, I just knew it in my stomach. I made a mistake. And I said, "Mom, can I just go to New York for a week just to audition? I just want to try it." She goes, "Yeah, go ahead." So I just skipped school for a week, went to New York, auditioned, and I ended up getting a lot of job offers. Like, I think it's like classic beginner's luck. And I said, "Mom, there's all these job offers. Can I take one?" She goes, "Yeah, go. This is what you want." And I did. And here I am. I did. I just went for it.
Did you move to New York straight? I guess you were still a teenager, technically. You were what? Second mm-hmm. year of college, you would have been 19
yeah,
years
I was,
old?
Yeah, I was 19. And when I left, I went to do a cruise ship that toured Europe. So I got to see, you know, the Mediterranean. We went up through the Baltic. And it was so good at that point in my life because I got to travel. I didn't have anything tying me down. When I came back from the cruise ship, that's when I moved to New York. I was about 20. And then I got a tour right after that called Starlight Express. Talk about being an athlete, put roller skates on your feet, and then sing and dance. It's like, it was the craziest show. We actually trained for 3 months. There was no choreography, nothing. We trained in Biloxi, Mississippi at a really, really, really old school roller rink. And we trained like 9 to 7 for 3 months.
That's intense stuff.
It was so intense. That's why they make you go through this training camp. And then you do 2 months of rehearsal where you still train in the morning for roller skating, like learning. Like, I can roller skate. Like, I can spin. I can go down bowls. I mean, not anymore. And I won't because I'm too scared of my body. But like, it's intense. I mean, we were literally being trained as athletes. And then they incorporated all the singing and the dancing and, you know, the scene work and stuff like that. It was crazy.
The thing that I found really interesting about your story is that in the grand scheme of things, I kind of like to compare it to a minor league journey. You didn't spend that much time in the minor leagues. You found success really quickly, especially since you got cast in your first Broadway show when you were all of what, like 22 years old?
I was 22. It was right after that Starlight Express tour. I went to New York for about 3 weeks. And I got Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
You get immediate work as soon as the tour ends.
I know, and it doesn't always happen, but it's all about your energy and your state of mind. And we use this term hungry. I was hungry in the best, most honest way, like out of love and passion for Broadway. I was just like, wow, I'm actually doing it. And it was a classic, like I had like 3 callbacks. I had to read for this featured role. And the singing and the dance, it was just a dream. And then getting that call was just, it was insane. Because I'm like, I did it. I did it. I moved to New York and I did it. It's nuts.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that way for most people. Do you realize how lucky you are even in that moment? Are you still like kind of green and, you know, wide-eyed? And
I was, but I also know that I worked really, really hard. Like I kept taking class. I kept putting myself out there, going to all these auditions and never giving up because this business is hard. There's a lot of rejection and it can really, really beat you down. And that's something that I always say to a lot of younger aspiring actresses or dancers. They're like, "Do you have any advice?" And I'm like, you get that thick skin ready. You know what I mean? It's just like you have to keep believing in yourself. And it sounds so cheesy and cliche, but it really is. If you lose sight of who you are and what you know that you can bring to this art form, then if you lose sight of that, then you're not going to succeed.
What do you remember about your Broadway debut?
God, now that I'm getting older, I don't want to say not much, but I'm like, gosh, it was 14 years ago. It's kind of interesting because your Broadway debut, interestingly enough, is your first preview. So it's not like you just like, it's your opening night. It's like we'd already been in the theater for, gosh, over 6 weeks. You know, you do 2 weeks of tech and then you have a month of previews. So it was pretty surreal being on a Broadway stage. I do remember doing the number Toot Suite where we're like in this candy factory and there was an audience there. And there was a moment in the lights looking at a dark theater that I was like, I did it. Like, I can't believe I'm actually here. And working with amazing people, like working with Raul Esparza and Aaron Dilley, Mark Kudish, Jan Maxwell, like all-star cast. I mean,
we have all-stars in baseball too.
Yes,
so that's like,
yes, exactly.
That lifts everyone else's game up around them.
Yeah,
I love that.
It's major league,
yeah,
right?
How did you take to living in the city, you know, at such a young age? And did you really embrace the lifestyle right from the get-go?
Oh yeah, I loved it. I loved it so much. I immediately met at that time, his name's Clyde Alves. He's now my husband, but he was my boyfriend back then. Once we started dating, we immediately moved in with each other.
When you say immediate, how soon is immediate?
Like, we started dating during summer stock for 3 weeks. And then I was like, I don't have any money and you don't really have any money. So to save money, you just want to move in together. So literally after 4 weeks of dating, we just jumped in. We lived together, I mean, in our 20s, we tore this town up. Like, we owned it. We were those idiots, because my husband was in Wicked. He was the dance captain at Wicked for a long time. And so we would do our Broadway shows. We'd meet up. We'd go out for pizza and a drink, take a cab home. Like, it was just, there were no cares. Like, it was incredible. And we would hit every Monday night on our day off. We'd always go to a different section in the village and try out a new restaurant, take long, long walks all through the night, go to a late night jazz club at like 3 a.m. We just tore it up. And then we had a baby. And I was like, get me out of here. It's like instantly, like, Maine came back. I was like, I can't do this. Get me out. I cannot have my baby in the city. It's so weird. And now I'm like, good. At the end of the night, I'm like, bye. Bye, New York.
Now, you did take on a lead role when you played Marty in the Grease revival. And mm-hmm. If you're anything like me with a father who had a big Olivia Newton-John crush, you were probably watching that a lot as a kid. Was that
yes.
a thing?
Yeah. Yes, I watched that movie quite a few times.
At that point, are you kind of like rounding the bases, feeling good about all this hard work that you've put into this, you know, sort of like your first career Grand Slam, which for many players is like the I made it moment in baseball. Take me through the emotions, you know, going through your head at that time, not just being on Broadway, but, you know, being a full-time starter.
Yeah, well, I mean, that landing Marty in Grease was a huge moment. That one is burned in my mind. When I got the call in my apartment, I remember the lighting, the way it looked in my apartment. I was in the bedroom. I screamed so loud, like bloody murder, that Clyde like ran out of the shower, like, because he thought I was hurt. Like, so he's just like standing there. He's like, what? Soaking wet. And I was like, I got Marty in Grease. Like, I'm going to be a principal on Broadway. Like, I'm going to sing my own song by myself on Broadway, I've wanted to do this character for so long that really, really hit me. And that was such a special time because I think in that show there were like 14 Broadway debuts. So we were all, this was my third show, but it was just this very young, vibrant, crazy energy. And I still have best friends from that show to this day.
Well, that crazy energy suits your personality well. And that's in a good way. So.
Yeah, well, we got in trouble a lot because we were just insane and kind of fooling around all the time. But we're playing high school kids.
Yeah.
We should be.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but it was pretty special. And that changed my state of mind. I was like, this is where I'm playing now. Like, I'm not going to go back to the ensemble. Like, I want this. This is my, and I've always been one to like climb. I've never seen myself being like, I want to do this and I want to be at the top. Like, it's just not my style. Like, I'm a Capricorn, I'm a goat, climb up that mountain, you know?
It's that. It's like that hard work thing that I mentioned earlier. I see that when we watch you perform, and that's, you know, everyone has their own unique style and whatnot. And I think it all goes back to your mindset. So that's really, really cool.
Yeah. And it was motivating. It was also, there was pressure because I'm like, okay, well now I'm a principal on Broadway. I have to keep going, keep rising, keep trying to get the next thing, you know?
Now we're going to take a short break. When we come back, it's time for the seventh inning stretch. Stay tuned. Now, Robin, before we graduate from Rydell High, I thought we could hit the batting cage for a few moments.
Let's do it.
All right. I have some trivia questions for you. And six.
I'm already nervous now.
There's six questions. Six questions, half Broadway, all shows you've been in.
Okay.
And half are going to be baseball, just to make you feel like you've really earned the prize that's at stake here.
Okay.
It's a big prize. And if you get four right, it's all yours. How does that sound?
It sounds great. I just got very nervous, though. Like unusually nervous. Am I going to embarrass myself?
If you do,
probably.
We could just cut it out. We're not live.
Oh, God. Okay, here we go.
All right. Again, all shows you've been in. Ezekiel Young was from Salt Lake City and was served an arsenic drink, as told to us in the Cell Block Tango. How many wives did he have?
Six.
One for one. What was the nickname for Alex Rodriguez? He is engaged to J-Lo.
I know. Oh, is this like A-Rod?
Two for two. I might have to like go to my really fun questions out because you're at a pretty good pace here.
Let's go. Getting amped.
All right. That's not just because of the coffee that you
have. No, I'm like getting really jazzed that I actually got two right.
What's popping? What's dropping? And what's fair to the point that you have to be there?
Hold on. Say the question again.
Okay. So what's popping? What's dropping? And what's fair? To the point that you have to be there.
Is this a lyric of a show
it
that I'm
is,
in?
It is. That you sang the song in the show.
Is this a Broadway show?
Yes, it is. Nice work if you could get it.
Oh my God. Oh, is that Sweet and Lowdown?
I had to be there.
Wow.
All right. What if I give you the answer and let's see how you feel after I give you the answer. Okay. Answer. Bottles are popping, dignity's dropping, and the women are fair.
Yes, I would have known that.
Okay, you would have known that?
Yeah. Wait,
what specifically was popping that.
Oh, man. I would have been like, oh, that's, I've got to be there. I've got to be there.
I wasn't exactly like performing it, you know, in the tone of the song.
Bottles are popping and dignity's dropping. Wow, I haven't actually sang that in, you know, 8 years.
We might have to give you bonus points after that performance, but let's see how you do with the rest of these.
Okay.
Which of the following baseball players did not play for the New York Yankees? Mickey Mantle, Babe Ruth, Aroldis Chapman, or David Wright?
Who did not play for the Yankees? I'm going to guess. Well, I know that Babe Ruth, he's in. Mickey Mantle's in. David Wright?
David Wright is right. All right.
it was a guess, but it was like my gut instinct. Yes.
How late did Sandy stay out till during summer nights with Danny Zuko?
10 o'clock.
That's correct. You win. Congratulations.
What do I get?
Sound the alarms. All right. Now, I figured as much that you might not be a Yankee fan, you know, having grown up. You know, up north, I figured that
I just,
you have some ties
to
the Red
Sox. If I said
Sox.
That I was a Yankee fan, all of Maine would come after me right now.
They would come to Broadway directly and try to, you know, riot at Moulin Rouge right now?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, with their pitchforks and their torches.
You're making Maine sound like the setting of like Beauty and the Beast or something like that.
Well, have you seen their fans? Like the Red Sox fans are nuts.
They are pretty nuts.
They're nuts. That New England.
All right. Well, that's why I didn't get you a Johnny Damon shirt. But this is the official Baseball Meets Broadway crossover shirt. We could discuss sizes later, and I have two options for you. But this is, this is our very own special branded Break a Bat shirt. It's just baseball, And then we have Aroldis Chapman on number on front. He plays for the Yankees, but he's kind of like our mascot. You've probably seen that guy who we put in all our Instagram posts with the translator. Yes. Yeah, that's him. So.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
You are welcome.
I love that it's the acting faces are breaking the bat.
I don't know if Moulin Rouge is going to do like a Broadway show league team, but like if you wear that, I bet you're going to hit a home run every time up.
Our show is so crazy. I bet our producers were like, absolutely not. you will not be playing softball on Thursday. Oh, we can't. We can't play because it's they're on Thursdays.
Oh, wow. You being the only show.
That's probably why they did it. They're like, put that matinee on the Thursday so they can't play softball. We got to keep our actors in.
They want to avoid the temptation that, God forbid, you were to go to be like a ringer at like Beetlejuice or Mean Girls or something. You don't want to play for their team.
No. I also, oh God, I'm terrible at baseball.
Have you tried?
I really have tried. I've tried at the batting cages. I tried to play on Nice Work, the softball league. Because my husband, he's very he's good at sports. Like he grew up doing sports, all kinds, rugby, soccer. He knows how to hit it. He didn't really play baseball, but he knows how to hit a ball. I do not. I know how to kick a ball. I mean, I have strong legs and I can kick, but. Man, something about that hand-eye coordination with that ball coming at me. There's a lot of strikes, a lot of fouls.
Well, I think that this could change your luck. Maybe. This shirt, I hope it does.
And I hope so.
You're not playing this season anyway. So, keep it in the, you could, I actually kind of hope you wear the shirt. So, keep it in the dresser for
when
you do
play
one day.
We have lift call like 4 times a week, which is basically because there's so many lifts in Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
I have to practice them just to make sure everything's still, because we're being tossed around and lifted up in the air. And I always, wear a long sleeve shirt because it's freezing in the theater. And this is going to be, I'm going to wear it today because I have lift call today.
Let's go, Robin. All right. That's awesome.
I'm going to slap that on Instagram.
I can't ask for a better endorsement than Robin Herter. Seriously. This is awesome.
Yeah, wait for it. I can't wait. I'm already thinking about my Insta story.
Oh, let's go. Now, I think in both baseball and Broadway, one thing that's really paramount to any successful performer is their pride and being true to themselves and being true to their heart. That's really part of what makes them so successful. Take the folks at home, through your mindset at the time when, Grease had ended and you really started to become selective about the roles you were taking and, maybe even starting to question, whether or not you wanted to continue doing this. Tell us a little bit about where your head was at.
Well, it's kind of a long journey. After Grease, I left Grease to do Cassie on the national tour of A Chorus Line. My husband was on it as well. He had already been out on the tour for 6 months, and then I joined 6 months later. That was also the big changer where I was just like, oh, well, now I'm playing the lead of the show, not just like a supporting character. This is the star of the show. And this is not the typical dumb blonde, you know what I mean? The Marty type. And I'm thinking like, okay, these are the kinds of roles that I have to do now, the more mature roles. And when I got off that tour, I was very confused as to who I was or what I was going in for auditions. And I didn't want to be in the ensemble anymore. I didn't really necessarily want to dance because I was pretty burnt out because Cassie's a huge dance role. And so when I was going in for these auditions, there's a thing where the people behind the table, they can smell your desperation. They can smell it. They can see your energy. And I went into every audition, I was just getting cut. Not a callback, like, thank you very much for coming in. And that was it. And this happened for about 2.5 years. I didn't work at all. And it was because I lost sight. I didn't know who I was or what I wanted or what do I want to be in this business. And then Nice Work came along. And I do Nice Work and it was really, really great. And it was, but then after a while, I keep saying the word like burnt out, but I just felt like everything was just so, not selfish, but just kind of, I found myself being a little self-absorbed. And I was like, I was 31 and I'm like, I think this is what's called my biological clock is ticking. And I think I want to do the most selfless thing I can right now. And I think it's time to have a baby. And I thought it was a good age to to take a break, not, you know, I didn't want to push it so far in, and I always wanted a chance to get back to see if I wanted, but I really needed to test myself to be like, is this really what you want? Because it doesn't, I wasn't that happy leaving the show. We had a good time, but I just, something was switching in me, and I think that was my body calling for, like, you're meant to be a mother. You've always been maternal. You've always wanted to take care of people. You take care of your friends. And I think that's what happened, was it's just, it was this way of just being like, take a minute, see if you really, really want to do this. And I had a baby, and I went a little nuts. That's, it's way harder than people think it is. Also, because we have this identity. I'm like, I go out, I party, I go on stage, I'm the, everything's, this is what my life is. And then all of a sudden it's ripped away. And it's not like we can go on a cute 3-month maternity leave and then just like go back to work. I mean, I was fat, you know, and when you do roles like me that, you know, I don't necessarily wear a lot of clothing with my roles. It seems to be like a thing happening. You have to look a certain way. And I just, with the hormones and everything, I mean, I didn't go back to work for 2 years. And then I got the show Kiss Me, Kate in DC, and I got to play Lois Lane, which was one of my favorite roles. And I was like, I need to do this. This is part of me. It was my 34th birthday, and I got this little heart tattoo.
Oh, wow. Now, what is that? What does that symbolize?
Well, I'm going to be honest. I wasn't totally sober when I got it. but it was just love, because I felt, on my birthday, I felt so empowered. I was like, I just had a baby. I lost some weight, and I'm doing one of my dream roles at an amazing theater, Shakespeare Theater Company. And I'm with my husband. I was playing opposite him. I was Lois Lane. He was Bill Calhoun. And I'm like, I did it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, this is the top of my career. Like, you know what I mean? And I just felt a lot of love on my 34th birthday. I was like, yes, man, heart. Always remember love. Strongest force.
That is so badass.
Part. Yeah.
I love it. Mm-hmm. And you have another one there. Is that from the same birthday?
Nope. That's from a couple summers ago. Again, not totally sober. I have this habit of just being like, let's go get a tattoo.
You are the life of the party.
I really am. I mean, at 36, I guess I got that. And I was like, yep. But this was to remind myself that, you know, your goals are, everyone's like, is that for your family? Like, and I'm like, nope, that's for me. To remind myself that don't let anybody dull your sparkle. That you are a superstar and you will achieve what you want to achieve.
So each of them have their own meaning. That's sick.
Yeah. I mean, I just like threes, but the meaning is literally like, don't take your eyes off the prize. You want to be a star.
And you are a star now in Moulin Rouge.
Well, I'm trying.
Now, did you like that movie a lot back in the day?
I was one of the like rabid fans.
Rabid,
like foaming at the mouth, sobbing, crying, opening weekend at the theater. I was there.
Were you showing up there in costume?
No. But I mean, it was one of those things where I watched that movie at least 3 times a year.
Now, it was a long process for that to actually make its way onto mm-hmm. Broadway, and you had quite the auditioning process to make it happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's been 10 years they've been talking about this whole show.
That's honestly incredible. And, you know, once you got the call that it was actually coming to Broadway and you nailed the role of Nini, I think that, you know, you mentioned your 34th birthday earlier, you know, kind of being like that rock star moment. When they take on, you know, an iconic movie in many ways, mm-hmm. it's often hit or miss.
Absolutely.
And we've seen it before. Do you feel a responsibility, you know, having been such a fan of that movie, you know, to really perform well?
Yeah. I mean, yes. It's interesting because I don't even look at them the same way. I think the movie is its own thing, and the show, it's like apples and oranges to me. Because I think what makes putting a movie musical as a musical is you can't take the movie, you can't take it from the screen and just slap it on stage. It's not going to work because then you're just doing a blatant comparison.
It's like if you play a VHS tape too much, eventually it starts to wear out and you can't use it anymore.
Yeah, but it's also like those people in the audience are like, okay, you're going to do exactly what the movie is. The movie was better. Or, you know, so I think that they did an amazing job paying homage to the moments that everybody wants. They give it to you. Yeah. They give you what you want. They give you the spectacular. They give you your come what may. They give you your Roxanne. But they've changed it up enough so you can't really compare the two, which is good. And I think that's why it's successful.
Now, you've been in some hits before. This one's a real powerhouse, however. I have every reason to believe that it very well could win a Tony Award. And I know that as a performer, you're often thinking team first. But from an individual standpoint with individual accolades, a lot of people are talking about you potentially winning a Tony this year. Is that something that crosses your mind right now?
I mean, I'm pretty humble. I want to do hard work. I think, of course, we want to root for our show. We don't want to just go around and be like, "Ooh, we're the hottest ticket in town," and the Tonys are very, very far, far away. So far away.
Personally, I'm not betting on the Michael Jackson show. So
no, I mean, listen. My ultimate goal, the ultimate, like I talk about climbing a mountain, the summit is the Tony for me. And I want to win it. I'd like to be nominated. I'd like to win it. Do I think that this is the show that's going to give it to me? Who knows? Am I expecting it? Absolutely not. I still have dreams. When I see that 11:11 on the clock, I will always wish for it.
I love that.
It's a goal, and I can see it, and I can feel it, and I can see myself up on stage and what gown I'm wearing, and I see it all. But is it with this one? I don't know. I don't do it every night being like, I want to get a Tony nomination. I just want to tell the story properly and give people a good time. That sounds so bad. You know, it's Moulin Rouge and just like, I'm going to give you a good time. But I do, you know? Oh, man.
Now, last thing about Moulin Rouge, you know, you talk about wanting, you know, to earn an award like that. You do some pretty crazy stuff in the show. What's the most challenging thing that you actually have to do when you're up there performing?
Well, there's this little number called Roxanne that obviously there's a lot of anticipation because that's one of the highlights in the movie. That scene is the best. When I was 19, I was shaking. I was like, I need to be this woman on Broadway. And I'm so proud of myself that I did it. The way that they've done this Roxanne, it's very dark. Like the stage is very dark, but there's these huge flashes of white light. And it really adds a lot of elements to the dance. And I have these four guys and they are just, there's this thing called, we call it matches, where I'm basically doing like a plank and a chest press. And I have the two boys holding my hands and my toes are on the ground behind me, like I'm in this plank. And they literally, it's like they're plowing a field, but it's my body. And I'm going the opposite way. So my toes are sliding across, being plowed across the stage, and it causes so much friction that it actually gets hot. Like I have to put a cap. I had them to put a cap on my shoe because one day in rehearsal I was like, "Feel my toe," like I had to stop because it was burning. So that's why the move's called Matches, and that's probably the most challenging. That whole section where the four guys are literally just flipping me around, and I can't really see because it's either pitch black or there's a flash of white light in my eye. So that's the most challenging part of the show, and it comes at the very end of the show for me. So once Roxanne's off or done, and I get dragged off by my partner Ricky Rojas, I just rip off my choker and I'm like, done. Done.
That's slamming your bat against the rack at the end of the game.
It literally is.
Just letting it all out.
No, it kind of is. It's like that Roxanne is like stepping up to the plate and you're just like, and I always say a prayer. I say, keep me safe, make me a star. I always say it. I can't believe I just said that out loud. I never tell anybody that. I always say, make me safe, or keep me safe, make me a star. And then it's like, the Garrett flies out and then the stark light is on my face. And it's kind of like that moment where you're just stepping up to the plate and you're just like, just let me hit a home run. And then you do when I have a good run at the, you know, for one show. And then I'm just like, yes, I did it. I just ran. What's it called when you run? When you
round the bases.
Round the bases.
Yeah. you are a warrior. And as tough as you are, we're going to take one last short break and we come back. It is time for Fastball Derby.
Oh my God.
Stay tuned.
I'm so excited.
Robin, you do some incredible things on stage every night. You've had an awesome career, but now it's about to get tough.
Okay.
It's time for Fastball Derby. Bottom of the ninth, you're at the plate trying to bring home the winning run, and Aroldis Chapman's on the mound throwing 105. I ask you a question, you say the first thing that comes to your head. Do you think you can handle it?
I think so. I'm so nervous again. Okay, go.
All right. Favorite New York City meal?
Becco. Sorry. Pasta, the unlimited pastas at Becco restaurant on Restaurant Row. Wow, that took a lot.
Are you more of like a red sauce or like a pesto type?
I'm an all sauce. I love a marinara. I love a truffle butter. I love all of it.
Go to pre-show ritual.
I put on my pop music and dance around while I brush my teeth.
By yourself?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That'll pump you up.
Yeah, I do. Just like blare like pop music and just dance around and brush my teeth.
Someone who is in the audience that you were most nervous or intimidated to perform in front of?
I think I will be most nervous when Caroline O'Connor comes to the show. She hasn't seen it yet. She plays Nene in the movie.
Is she scheduled to come soon?
No. Okay. And I hope people won't tell me that she's in the audience because I don't get starstruck or I get nervous about people because I've been doing the show for so long, but that's the one that, because I have such respect for her, that's the one that's going to make me nervous. Even though I think the roles are so different from movie to musical, it's still, she's the reason, man.
Biggest pet peeve?
Chewing with your mouth open. I yell at my son all the time. Close your mouth. Mouth noises. Can't stand them. Okay.
Most embarrassing onstage moment.
Oh, gosh. Well, I was in the musical Spamalot as the orange ensemble girl. And there's this moment in Camelot where it's just, we have these like stretchy bras and they have one hook in the center of our chest. And what did I do but cross my arms and I unhooked the bra and that bra went flying. And I just grabbed it around, crossed my arms, did a Shanae turn, and ran off stage. I was like, whoa, that 2,000 people just saw that. That was literally, I was like face numb, like that just happened. And then they like bolted me in after that.
Favorite late night snack? Two show day, you get home, it's after midnight. What's Robin grabbing before she hits the couch?
Oh my gosh, buffalo chicken wings, and I can put them down.
So wait, you have access to buffalo chicken wings at midnight? Do you make them yourself? You have
I make them myself, and it's a really good recipe. Like I'm a big cook. Like I love cooking. But I'm kind of lying. Like it's not like something that's like on hand usually, but it's like if I want something after the show, it's usually buffalo wings or chicken nachos or hamburger or buffalo chicken tenders. I eat like a piglet.
I'm glad you didn't say something like vegan. That's like a thing now.
One of my best friends in the show, Max Clayton, we had to do this thing, like how well do you know your best friend at a late night show? And they asked each other, what is their pet peeve? And Max wrote down vegans. I still have the piece of paper that you wrote it on. I laughed so hard. It was mouth noises. But yeah, I'm a piglet. I love really good bar food.
Proudest moment of your career?
I had the opportunity of revisiting Cassie last year at New York City Center. It was the part of their 75th anniversary gala. Chorus Line was the show, and they asked me to do Cassie again, and it was the final performance, and I finished the number, and the theater stood up, and it still, like, chokes me up now, because I'm like, wow, that's like the epitome of a, I don't like to say the word triple threat, a person who can sing, dance, and act, and be a female in the business. You can't get above Cassie. She has to do it all. And it's such a challenge to execute it really well in that last performance. And I didn't even realize until afterwards, Tony Asbeck came up to me. He's like, hey, standing O. And I was like, what? And he goes, I knew that they were clapping. Like, I stayed in that position for a really long time. And I just held it because Bjork, you know, who trains me, she said, you stand up when the clapping starts to die down. And I just stayed there. And I didn't realize everybody was standing up. Because then when you get up, you've just danced for 12 minutes and I can't see anything. I'm literally like, just trying. I can't see anything. I'm all blurry. But they were all standing. And that was just such a way to go out. Like a role that's like, that's the epitome of, if you can sing, dance, and act, you can't get higher than that. And I did it in New York City at the right age, and people saw it and they appreciated it. It was pretty amazing.
That's prime real estate, yeah.
Yes, correct.
And lastly, best piece of advice anyone ever gave you, and what was it?
Funny enough, it was Kelly O'Hara. I did Nice Work with her. And it's when I was confused and I didn't know what to do because I didn't know how I was feeling. And I was talking to her about having a baby because she was trying for another one. I mean, when she said this, she was pregnant and she didn't tell anybody. but I was talking to her a lot about it. And she goes, Robin, there's never going to be a right time. You're never going to have enough money. And there's always going to be a job that you could miss out on. So just do it. And I did it. And it's the best decision I ever made because I have this beautiful baby boy now. And I did it and I came back and this is the top. It's not like I've gone backwards in my career. I get to do Nini in Moulin Rouge on Broadway. And I have this 6-year-old child now. I'm pretty proud of myself, to be honest, because it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all know, how great of a career you had, and can't thank you enough for coming in to give us more insight about it. It's just been awesome. It's so cool to hear the stories behind the art.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It was awesome.
Anytime, Robin.
I wish I knew more about baseball.
That's all right. You won fastball derby in like all of 5 questions. You go 4 for 5 like that. That's like,
all right.
You get 4 hits in a baseball game and within 5 at bats. That's like you're on SportsCenter that night.
Yeah. All right. I will say that my favorite sport, like I love going to baseball games.
Yeah.
And whenever we were on tour, that was one thing that we always tried to do. Like
go to
a baseball game if it was warm.
Let's do like a Broadway takeover on like a Monday night Yankee game next year or something like that.
Fun.
Let's do that.
Oh my gosh.
We could like take over like the whole left field or right field section.
Oh, that
would
be so fun.
Why don't we put that together?
Yeah.
All
right. Like
I think we'll get some pretty good guests if you're kind of co-captaining that with me.
And I've never seen a Yankees game. No, I know. I know.
Wow.
I know.
What a note to end on.
I'm so sorry. I'll get there.
That's it. Well, now we have reason to. Now
exactly.
You know that we're breaking stigmas here.
We can, this can be a moment. We'll just do, yeah, we got to. Yeah.
We have a few months, but we can make
brainstorm.
It happen.
Let's do it.
Down.
Awesome.
You've been great, Robin. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That'll close out the ball game here on Break a Bat. I'm Al Malafronte signing off from the Broadway Podcast Network studios. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to Break a Bat. This is produced by the fine folks at the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit and subscribe at bpn.fm/breakabat. You can find me online at break_a_bat_podcast. And you can also find the Broadway Podcast Network on Instagram at Broadway Podcast Network. It's been so great having you here with us today, and we'll see you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.